All right. Movie review.
Yeah, this one's Phantasm 2. We brought you Phantasm 1, and we said, we said that was a pretty good movie for being such a low-budget flick. And really, Phantasm 2 tops it.
I think.
It tops it, yeah. This is one of the few times when the sequel is actually better than the original.
Yeah.
Don't you agree?
I do, but I think the horror community seems a little divided on
it. I don't care what they're saying. I'm saying...
No, I'm just saying...
Look at the difference in the sets.
Yeah.
Look at the difference
well,
in the
special
effects.
Well, I'm going to kind of get into that a little bit, too.
Go ahead.
Why people thought that.
Okay.
So the thing about Phantasm 1 was that, you know, like we said in our review of it, it's very low budget. You know, they filmed it for, you know... I don't remember.
Phantasm 1 was almost like a fan film done for love.
Yeah.
And when you're watching it, it is communicating a lot of, you know, care. You know what I mean? They didn't have a lot of money, but they cared about what they were doing. And you could tell it was kind of made by a group of friends, really. And you know, they're telling you a story and they're taking you on a journey. I liked it. I thought it was good.
Now, the thing about Phantasm 2 is that they approached Universal Studios, approached Don Coscarelli, and wanted to do a sequel. So he actually got $3 million, which, you know, comparatively, that's a lot of money to do a horror sequel, because there was a lot of horror sequels in production in the mid to late 80s. And they thought, you know, we're going to jump on the cash cow because Phantasm was a big cult hit. So they gave him $3 million, which he was happy about. And they were able to hire, you know, Greg Nicotero and his K&B studios to do the effects. And the effects still look very good.
Yeah, that they were awesome.
But one of the things that horror fans were kind of pissed off about is that the studio did not want the kid who played Mike in the first movie to be in the second movie.
I can understand why that
because he was not a working actor. Like, he'd been in that movie, and he hadn't really been in any movies in the, I believe it was 9 years.
Yeah.
You know, between the two movies. So they said, well, we want somebody that's, you know, Screen Actors Guild, somebody that's like a working actor.
Right.
And so...
Well, I can understand why the fans, the original, might be pissed off about that. But the actor that they did use was good.
Yeah, they got James LeGros, and he was actually pretty good in it.
Yeah.
The original actor did come back for 3 and 4, which I haven't seen. And again, there's a lot of divisive kind of stuff on that. Some people are like, well, 3 is like super campy, but it's super fun.
Right.
The fourth one, which I think is called Phantasm Oblivion, is supposedly, it's like some people's favorite one.
Right.
But
it's my understanding that those were like direct to DVD releases.
They were.
Which a lot of times means terrible a lot of times. But you know what? Recently, direct to DVD, if you're buying it from the right person, is quite good.
Yeah, I don't really think that it has the same stigma that it used to have. Like stuff that goes...
No.
I mean, shit, look at the awesome stuff that goes right to DVD, or right to Netflix, rather.
Yeah.
Some of that stuff's fantastic.
Some of the new Stallone stuff, pretty much very limited theatrical release. It's meant to make its money DVD, like Expendables and I think Bullet to the Head. Those are awesome. But they're targeted right to Stallone's audience.
Yeah.
You know, it's good. So they never would have existed without that ability to go direct to DVD, you know, probably pay-per-view and stuff like that. But that's awesome. So I kind of like that new element into show business, you know what I mean, where you don't have to worry about theatrical releases too much, you know.
Well, yeah, the limit of entry is like much lower. It's easier for people to get a movie made because you don't have to worry necessarily about it playing at theaters. I mean, if you can get
you just target right to the fans,
yeah, or whatever.
I mean, even a guy like Seagal who makes terrible movies can target to his friends. I've seen those things. I can't understand how anybody can watch them. Ugh.
I can't. They're not even fun to watch.
Man,
they're
just
like,
he had a DVD that had like 7 or 8 movies on it for $2.
Yeah.
I saw that, you know what I mean?
And you would probably feel like you overpaid.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Phantasm 2 was actually the last theatrical release in the Phantasm franchise.
Yeah.
Now, I think I mentioned this on the first one, but I saw Phantasm 2 in the theater in 1988. Was I even old enough? I don't even remember. But I saw it, I specifically remember seeing it in theater, and I remember there being like big layouts about it in Fangoria and stuff with all the cool special effects, like the tall man, like the yellow melting and all that stuff at the end. And so I had actually seen part 2 before I saw part 1. Like I said, there are two, it didn't do well at the box office. I believe some other big movie came out around the same time. It had been such a long time since the first movie, and the first movie was kind of a cult horror movie. So I think it didn't really have a lot of broad mainstream appeal.
Right.
Although they did have, on the Blu-ray, they have that great, that great documentary about it where they show like the premiere and they had the tall man was there, the hearse, and they had the whole big thing.
Yeah.
And it was like, I guess like all the hardcore fans showed up. So all the horror nerds were out there with their shirts and everything.
Yeah.
But like, it really, really didn't do very well at all. And the thing is that the first one was very surreal, right?
Yeah.
And very like a dream and stuff.
Yeah, you weren't really sure what the rules were. Things would just happen and then
this
you just had to accept it.
This one is kind of surreal, but I think there was some studio meddling where they said, we don't really want any dream sequences. We want a more straightforward story.
Right, more grounded in reality.
Yeah, so I think people were kind of mad about that because I think what people liked about the original Phantasm was it was just like a fever dream. Like,
right,
it didn't make sense and it didn't even need to. It was just creepy and that was it.
Those silver balls come back. There's three of them now. One of them is actually kind of gold. They do different things now, so they kind of upped the game.
Yeah, everything in this is more.
There's like more of it.
You know, it's not
the Jawas look better.
Yeah, they actually show their faces.
Yeah, their little feet.
And their little feet.
Yeah, this is a trip.
And they kind of explain a little bit more about the mythology. Not a lot. It's more like a road picture, honestly.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing is that you don't really have to have seen the first movie to see it, because I saw this one first and I wasn't super confused or anything. Because, like I said, it's one of those ones that it kind of has surrealistic elements. So you just kind of have to roll with it anyway. But, you know, there's not a lot that's not explained that was not explained in the first one. So it's fine.
This picture here is more like a conventional horror movie.
Yeah.
Yes, maybe. It's because there was more money behind it. And of course, the studio is going to try to keep things grounded. They're like, nope, that's going to cost
exactly
you money.
That's exactly what they said.
Okay, no, do more of this. The crowd will like that.
Yeah.
Because they're professionals. They know. Yeah, I'm going to tell you, I think it was better than part one. Even though I enjoyed part one, I think part one really set the stage for this movie. Some people would say, hey, man, part one's the original. I understand that, too. You know, but I don't have the nostalgia for it because I've only seen them recently.
Yeah.
And from my point of view, I really appreciated part one. I thought that was an awesome low-budget flick. This is more has a bigger budget. It feels like it has a bigger budget. It is a little more conventional. So I can see
the structure is more conventional.
Right. The structure and the way it films a little more conventional.
It's not dreamlike much.
And some of the stuff that was happening in the first one, I think, was, talent, not money, but just talent and them trying to get around the obstacle and get the task done, you know, as cheaply as possible. And sometimes that'll give you a certain feel that puts on like a creepy air to the movie.
Yeah.
You know, like what do they call it? Atmosphere. The atmosphere is a little creepy because it's not conventional. It's like you're watching crime scene photos or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of like what the first one's like. This one's more like a regular Hollywood horror movie.
But it's still pretty weird, though.
Yeah, it's weird.
I mean, it's not really like anything else that came out. It still has surrealistic elements
to
it.
They took the weirdness of Phantasm 1 and they kind of made it a little bit more palatable and a little bit more presentable for the big screen.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a way to put it.
Even then, I don't really think... I mean, like I said, I think I have even more nostalgia for this one than I do for the first one because I saw this one first. I saw it in the theater. I had all the Fangoria stuff. I had like posters that I had pulled out of Fangoria that were on my wall of the tall man and stuff. And also when it came out on cable after, I taped it on VHS for all you kids that had, tape. And I had a VHS tape of it taped off cable and I watched it over and over. And it's funny because I hadn't seen it for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And when we got it on Blu-ray and we rewatched it, and I was like, I was amazed at how much it just all came back to me.
All came back to you.
Like, because I had forgotten a lot of the stuff, like, in the ensuing years, because I haven't seen it for probably 20 years.
The Blu-ray transfer that I have of this, it looks fantastic.
It looks really nice, and the effects look great.
The music is good. The soundtrack's good. It's got a lot of extras, you know, the behind-the-scenes stuff, interviews, documentaries. It's a good buy. I think it was Shout Factory, wasn't it?
Screen Factory, Shout Factory.
I think it was something like that.
Yeah.
But I think it's the only Blu-ray offering up there on eBay right about now. Anyway.
Yeah.
It was just, I didn't really see too many different choices for part two. I'm going to go check out part three too to see.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a Blu-ray release for it. I think it's only
DVD. I want to see the other because, you know, we've had people tell us that the other two are good too. And, you know, I like the whole concept of the series. So I really would like to see and kind of judge for myself. But
they probably go back to the roots that were there in Phantasm 1.
Well, they go back to the entire original cast.
Yeah.
So, you know, the first kid, the kid that played Mike in the first movie comes back in the third and the fourth. I'm not sure about the fifth, Ravager. Has that even come out yet?
Yeah, it's out. Yeah, I thought it was out. And some people were saying that was like the best one.
Yeah, okay.
That was the best one.
So, yeah, that's right. So there's five.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so this one, I want to say, like, there's a lot of really cool extra stuff on the Blu-ray also. There was a, you know, there's a whole, what do you call it? A whole documentary called, I think it's called The Ball Is Back, because that was the poster tagline. That's just kind of about the making of it. It's about 48 minutes. And then there's a thing about Greg Nicotero, who's still pretty young in 1988 and talking about doing all the special effects work. I mean, this is for sure gorier than the first one, way gorier. It's very goopy.
Yeah, and there is difference. When you think about it, Phantasm 1 was creepy because it had kind of cheap elements to it. The special effects were low budget, but they were kind of effective, even though you could tell they were fake.
Yeah.
They were effective, and because they were cheap, it also, in a way, kind of looked creepy.
Yeah.
And it kind of gave you a different emotional response.
I think that's why some of the cheap movies from the 70s are still kind of eerie, because they almost look like a home movie.
Yeah.
Like that shit really happened.
Yeah.
And someone was filming it.
A home movie and a snuff flick.
Yeah.
Something like that. You know, I mean, it had that feel to it. This one doesn't have that feel. The special effects, they're all practical effects. They're good practical effects from my point of view.
Yeah, they stood up very well, I think.
You know, I like practical effects. There's something about it, you know what I mean? Even though...
Well, everything's actually there.
Yeah, they don't... To me, they're not really convincing. I know the trick that they did, but I like that better than the CG stuff.
I particularly like, and it's kind of... It's such a little thing.
Yeah.
But I kind of like the one scene where the priest gets his ear taken
off,
his ear sliced off by the ball.
Yeah.
And they showed how they did it.
Yeah.
And I was like, duh, why do you think... It was like such a
simple
little thing.
So simple.
But you wouldn't really think of it, but they thought of it and it looked great, I thought.
Yeah.
But but like I said, it's just like this one, everything is ramped up. There's way more gore.
It's a little bit more believable, the gore, because the budget for it's a little, you know, it looks better.
One of the coolest things about this, and this was this movie, right? They blew up that actual house.
Yeah.
So there was no CGI. It wasn't a trick. It wasn't a miniature.
They bought
a house that was abandoned.
Yeah.
For some stupid
amount
of money.
They were going to build it. They were moving a freeway.
Yeah.
So all those houses were worthless.
They were worthless.
And most of them, people were buying them and they were having trucks coming to pick them up and move them somewhere else.
Right.
They just bought it for like $100 and blew it up on site.
So they could blow it up.
Yeah.
And the best thing about it is that, well, they could only blow it up once, obviously.
Yeah.
So they had to have like three things going on at the same time. You had to have Mike and the chick like running over here. You had to have Reggie over here, and you had to have the tall man coming away from the explosion. So they had to film like three different times.
Simultaneously. As the house blows up.
And the best thing about this is the tall man, he's just like walking away from the explosion like it ain't no thing.
Yeah,
it's
right,
just
like
all cool and shit. Like, house is blowing up right behind me. And he totally did that.
Yeah.
Angus Grimm is such a trooper.
Yeah.
He's passed away now, sadly.
Yeah.
But he was
kind of an older guy even back in these days.
He was, And really, he's cool. There's cool about him because he really, really seemed to like that character.
Yeah,
he
liked
really
it.
Seemed to have a good time playing it. Like when he was out when they showed him at the opening and everything, he was all like hamming up the role and everything.
Yeah.
And they showed him at different horror cons and stuff. So he really seemed like he was into that role. And I thought that was pretty cool. So this one, like I said, the cool thing about this, Don Coscarelli, I mean, you know, when he wrote the original Phantasm, he has gone on record as saying, well, I had never planned to make a sequel. I mean, I thought the end of Phantasm was pretty definitive.
Yeah.
So, you know, 9 years later, when they come out and go, hey, you might want to do a sequel to that, he said, I had no idea what to do. And then finally he said, hey, you know, why don't I just make it start exactly where the first one ended?
Yeah.
Which it kind of does. But then it kind of jumps forward in time, obviously, because they had to have an older actor.
Right.
So when James LeGros comes as Mike, he was a kid in the first one, he's evidently been at a mental hospital because he told people about all the tall men and the little dwarves and everything like that. And everyone thought he was crazy. So he's been in a mental hospital for like 7 years or something like that. And then he gets out and he decides, well, he actually fakes sanity. Well, he's sane, obviously, but they think he's crazy. But he fakes it. He's like, yeah, that stuff, that was all totally bullshit. Yeah, let me out. So they let him out, and then he goes and hooks up with Reggie again. And they go on a road trip, because I guess they don't really say this outright.
They were looking for the tall man.
But I guess the tall man, what he does is he goes to these small towns and pretty much dwarfifies all of the dead people in the town. And then all the towns are abandoned.
Yeah.
And then he moves on to the next one, because And that's another like creepy aspect. It almost gave it like the aspect of like a zombie film. Yeah. Because here's Mike and Reggie in the Hemikuda.
Yeah.
And they're going from these little towns in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
They go to this town that's just like all abandoned and boarded up.
Yeah.
And all the cemeteries are all empty. Like they're all the graves are open, right, and all this other kind of stuff. It's really cool.
Visuals. And by the way, they roll the Hemikuda in this one. It's not the exact same car. All right. That first one was beautiful.
Yeah,
all right.
Spoiler alert.
They bought a Hemikuda and rolled it. Even back in the days when people were like, wait a minute, hold on. Do you want to destroy these? There aren't many of these left.
Yeah.
They rolled it.
I know. Rolled and you got very upset.
Yeah. I was like, man, that's a real Hemikuda. Even in 88, those were hard to find.
And I was actually reading a review of this on the AV Club.
Yeah.
And a couple, like most of the people on there that were commenting were like, oh, I love this movie so much. And somebody did comment. It was like, oh, my God, I can't believe they rolled the heavy gear that they fucked it up.
Yeah, screwed it up. You know, the car probably survived the roll. You could probably
I hope so.
Oh, wait a minute. No, it blew up.
It blew up.
And set it on fire. And that was the CUDA that was burning.
Yeah. Sometimes
you can go to the junkyard and another modder will come and go, yeah, I could fix that. You know what I mean? It is.
Yeah. Well, not if it's just like a burned husk.
Not if it's burned husk.
Obviously.
No.
So another thing they do on this one, like I said, other than making a road movie, they introduce a couple more characters.
Mm.
One of them is the blonde girl at the beginning. And she is introduced, I guess she lives in a town where the tall man is now, and the tall man is in the process of draining this town and almost everybody's gone, and her grandma dies and stuff like that, but she has a psychic link with Mike, so they've been like communicating in their dreams, and he somehow knows that she's a real person, and so they're kind of looking for her as well. They don't really explain why she has a psychic link with him, or you know, how he knows that she's a real person or where she's at or anything like that, but it doesn't really matter. And then the other character they introduce is Alchemy.
Yeah.
And she's this hitchhiker that they pick up on the road. Now, creepily before this, in one of the abandoned towns, Mike has seen a dead body on a slab in a morgue that looks like her. But then, like, when he looks back, it's not there. So he's like, oh, well, I must have just been seeing things. But then they pick her up later on.
Right.
One of the best things, and this was actually, I don't know why I remembered this scene the most of all of the ones, but where Alchemy and Reggie are having sex in the cabin or whatever, and she keeps smacking his bald head.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God, Reggie, I love your head.
Right, yeah.
That fucking
guy. She was beating him up pretty bad, and that actor's wife was on the other side of the wall during that scene.
Yeah.
It was pretty fun. And he's in his 40s, and she's like 18 or 19.
I know. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, one thing I do like about part two is they introduced this evidently ongoing concept of Reggie being like a babe magnet.
Yeah.
Even though he's basically bald with a bullet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Which I could see though, because in this one, Reggie kind of channels his inner Rambo.
Yeah,
he becomes ice cream man, right?
Yeah, yeah. He becomes very heroic in this flick. There is character development in this movie.
Yeah.
You will enjoy it. You know what I mean? It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's like they get all kind of crazy weapons and all
that. Yeah,
all
I can kind of see an Evil Dead influence in the second.
They definitely threw in
some stuff from the Evil Dead. I was just glad to finally get to see the Phantasm property. You know, because I remember it from elementary school and I wasn't able to see it at that time. And then I've kind of forgotten all about it.
Yeah.
Recently, just doing this show, I was able to find it. You know what? I never got to see Phantasm.
Yeah.
So now I get to see a horror franchise from the past that I never got to see. You know?
Well, that's pretty cool. I always like when that happens.
Right. Because
that's
why
I like when people recommend like movies from the 70s and 80s that I haven't heard of.
Yeah. We're old people. You know, we think we know it all. We think we've seen all these movies. And then we remember, I never saw that one. I've seen
a good portion of them, but there are some that fall through the cracks.
Yeah. This one fell through the cracks. I mean, I didn't realize it was this good or I would have watched it a long time ago. This is up there. For me, as a franchise, this kind of on par with the Evil Dead, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's just similar, less wacky, more surreal, I guess.
Yeah, so far. We haven't seen the other ones.
And interestingly, I was going to say, when you said it was influenced by Evil Dead, there is a little scene in this where one of the cemetery guys or workers, he takes somebody out of the crematory oven and smushes their bones up and everything, and then he's pouring the cremains in the plastic bag, and the little label on the plastic bag says Sam Raimi on it.
Yeah.
I wonder if Sam Raimi saw that and was like, oh, Yeah. Nice. But yeah, they refer to each other's movies all the time.
But if you guys haven't seen Phantasm 2, go ahead and see it. You'd love it.
Yeah, you know? I actually like it a little bit better than the original. Less surreal. Yeah. It's more like a real movie, but it's still pretty surreal comparatively.
I'm looking forward to buy the other ones. I'm going to buy them all.
Yeah, and we'll want to see the other ones, and we'll see how they go.
Because, yeah, we'll do reviews on them all.
Like I said, I've heard mixed reviews. Some people love them. Some people hate them. So, you know,
I like shitty movies, too. I mean, you can give me a shitty movie, and as long as it's
shitty in a particular way,
as long as I'm either laughing at it or with it or, you know, enjoying it, then I can put on Steven Seagal and I can take it. I mean, depending, you know, I can start laughing. So, well, actually, that last one that I put on.
Yeah.
I found a bootleg copy.
Yeah.
From my stepdad's stuff that I inherited, and I put it in there, and it was great until I see Steven Seagal.
this is a good movie.
Then all of a sudden Star shows up and I'm like, oh shit. and he had the worst fake Southern accent of all times. And he's just trying to talk tough and talk shop like he's a special operations soldier.
He's just really
And that dude's a total fake. He's a total fake.
I mean, I just can't stand what's
he's a big dude. All right. He would rip your ass, but it has nothing to do with martial arts. Although, you know, they say he's a...
Well, now he might eat you.
He's a shiatsu master. They say he could rub breast cancer right out of a tit. You know that? He went all through Hollywood just trying to...
That's got to be the lamest line.
He's notorious for trying to help women with breast cancer.
That's right up there with the whole telling women you're a gynecologist.
I guess. Yeah, exactly.
That's like that.
Yeah. Let me check, make sure everything's okay down there.
What the fuck, man? I don't understand how you would have to be either really, really stupid or really, really arrogant to think that was going to work. Yeah. It's like 99.99% of the women on earth will just look at you and go, "Go fuck yourself."
Okay.
You stupid dude.
All right. So we got to get back on topic.
Yeah. So anyway,
I've been hitting him up with what's his name?
I'm picking up poor Steven Seagal.
Steven Seagal.
He's going to waddle over to this house.
He uses to paint that hair on. I got a picture of him before
and
after.
It's probably just Krylon, dude.
When he was in his 30s, he actually had a receding hairline. Now he's got a full-on Eddie Munster widow's peak. And it's razor sharp.
Yeah.
You could cut glass with that.
Has a little template that he uses. Because you know how girls have those little templates for eyebrows? Like to draw eyebrows on? It's like a little plastic kind of thing.
Okay, yeah.
He probably has that, but it's like it's shaped like a triangle. And then you just spray your Krylon on your head. And kind of touch it up with
We got to go. We got to end the show.
See Phantasm 2.
Yeah.
Tell us if you liked it better than the first one or if you didn't like it better than the first one. I actually like it a little bit better than the first one.
I
can understand if you don't.
The mausoleum looks so much better.
It does.
The sets and everything looks
the first one, that mausoleum set did look cool, but you could tell that was faux marble wallpaper.
Yeah, and it was the same pattern over and over and over again.
Yeah, in a way, that kind of made it cool.
It made it look like a dream, a really bad dream of a mausoleum.
Right.
Like you weren't looking at a real mausoleum. It was a mausoleum from an image in your head that you dreamt up.
Yeah, which is a good way of putting it. I think that's why that movie's
It had a nightmarish quality.
Yeah, because the stuff didn't really look real.
Yeah,
but it looked like some shit you'd come up with like in your dream.
Like when you have, whenever I have a nightmare, sometimes it's taking place in old rundown 70s houses with really worn out cheap shag carpeting everywhere and 70s furniture. And it looks so 70s and rundown. It doesn't really look real. It looks like something you just invented. It looks like something from this movie.
Yeah.
You know?
But Phantasm 2 is a lot slicker. The gore is still very good. I think the gore holds up pretty well, actually.
For practical effects of the time.
Of
you know what I mean?
Late 80s, sure. Yeah, and like definitely. I said, it was Greg Nicotero who's kind of like, you know, he's the gold standard pretty much as far as that type of thing goes. So, you know, there's
looking
a lot
forward
of cool
to seeing parts.
Stuff.
I'm looking forward to seeing part three and four and five. I'll watch them all.
Yeah. And all we will do reviews of those also. So if you like the show, remember to like, share, subscribe, and share with all your friends. Also, if you'd like to financially support the show, we have a Patreon page at patreon.com/13o'clock. Or you can go to our blog at 13o'clockpodcast.wordpress.com. And there is a link in the sidebar to a PayPal account if you'd like to give a one-time donation. Also, remember to check out our regular episodes, which come out every Tuesday, and our movie reviews, which come out every Friday. And until next time, bye.